Chapter 6. Telling the Truth. Sunday, 8th of October. Noon, the Electric Bar, Portobello Road. You do have to tell them, Bridge, said Miranda. I nodded, sucking diet tonic through a straw. Even though we were sitting in the electric, my urge to drink alcohol had suddenly disappeared. The very thought of it made me feel strangely acidic and queasy, almost as if I had a hangover. Which is odd when you think about it. Bridget!
What?
I said, jumping. You have to tell them. The fathers.
Oh, yes, no, I do, I said.
I will. Shall we get some more chips? Do you want to feel my bump? They all somewhat wearily and perfunctorily patted my bump.
Start with Daniel, said Tom, to practice.
Text him now, said Miranda.
She can't just text him out of the blue.
Yes, I can. I can do what I like. I've got a baby to look after. I picked up the phone, bold as you please, and texted, Cleaver, Jones here. I want to talk to you. Can I see you this week? He texted back immediately.
Daniel Cleaver. Rather out of the blue, Jones, but why the hell not? Be delighted to see you. Friday night, I shall pick you up and take you out to dinner in my new car.
Blimey. Is it that easy? Have I been sitting here, being so obsessed with making sure people think I don't fancy them, in case they think I'm needy, that they actually think I don't fancy them? Friday, 13th of October. 7 p.m, Daniel's car, South London.
Like the car, do you, Jones?
As Daniel and I zoomed across Waterloo Bridge, I was desperately trying to find a moment to bring up the baby before we got to the restaurant, lest the whole thing caused a public scene. But Daniel was completely obsessed with his new Mercedes.
It seems like it's purring like a kitten, but put your foot down and woomph!
Daniel suddenly accelerated, causing an alarming lurch in my stomach.
Do you like the pale grey interiors, Jones? I was going to go for black or even a rather luscious blood red, but I thought this was delicate and actually rather pretty.
Daniel had chosen Nobu Restaurant on Park Lane, which was the sort of place where one might easily run into Posh and Becks, or indeed Brad and Angelina, in which case I could have settled the argument once and for all with Mum about whether or not Maddox was how Angelina got Brad Pitt. Sadly, there were no visible celebrities. It was rather, I assume, like going on safari and finding there were no lions or tigers. There was, however, an unmistakable scent of fish in the air. As the waiter led us to the table, Daniel still hadn't paused for breath long enough for me to bring up, well, anything, really. He had now moved on from his new car to his new novel, The Poetics of Time.
Conceptually, it's time's arrow in reverse. The characters believe time is moving backwards, but it's actually moving forwards.
But wouldn't that just mean time is moving in the direction it normally does move in? I said.
It's a conceptual novel, Jones. It's existential.
What was the matter with him? Normally, Daniel's only interest was getting you to tell him what knickers you used to wear at school.
Yes, but still, I said doggedly, as the waiters brought us the menus, wouldn't it be a bit obvious that it wasn't?
The menu was all fish. Different kinds of fish. Sushi fish. Tempura fish. Fish that had been spoon-fed on sake for hundreds of years. I felt the baby thrashing in a frenzy of fish outrage.
Wasn't what, Jones?
Going backwards. I mean, if time was going backwards, you'd notice straight away. Cars would be going backwards. Fish would be swimming backwards, I said, feeling a lurch in my stomach.
Fish.
Through my new pregnancy-induced passivity, I let Daniel order the food and carry on about his backwards-though-not-backwards book. It was all very odd. Daniel seemed to have developed some sort of urge to be taken seriously.
Maybe it was to do with the advancing years. The car, too. I was having a baby and Daniel was having a cliché. You see, this is an alternative conceptual universe, Jones, continued Daniel. There are no fish in the poetics of time.
Well, that's something to be grateful for,
I said brightly. As the waiter placed the food, all fish, in front of us, I felt I really had to get away from the poetics of time and on to the meat of the matter. It's a new reality which makes one question one's very... Right. It sounds very, look, Daniel, there's something I need to...
I know,
he said, and paused for dramatic effect. Then he switched into the more typical Daniel seducer mode, leaning towards me and looking deep into my eyes with an air of flimsy sincerity.
I was appalling, Jones. There should have been phone calls, sobbing gratitude for our explosive night. There should have been floral tributes, trinkets, chocolates, delicately embossed with our two names entwined on little hearts. I have been in total writing lockdown hell, editing galleys, the launch. You can't imagine the creative weight of having an entire novel in one's head and... Excuse me.
Yes, Jones.
Could you shut up? You're talking bollocks.
Ah, you're right, Jones. Right as ever. Remind me what knickers you wore at school. I suddenly retched. Everything all right?
I'm not sure I can manage the fish. Do you think I could order a baked potato?
Ah, well, the thing is, you see, Nobu, being a Japanese restaurant, does not make a forte out of baked potatoes, jam, roly-poly, pork pies, that sort of thing. You've just ordered a lovely pink miso trout, which has been marinated in seaweed and fed on sake for 400 years. Eat it up. There's a good girl.
I had to concentrate so hard on keeping the food down that by the time the doorman was handing me back into Daniel's new car with its new leather smell, I still hadn't brought up the fact that the baby, who was now wrestling furiously with a miso trout inside me, was even there.
Lovely evening,
murmured Daniel, clicking something on the dashboard and revving the car with a roar. Daniel, there's something I have to... The miso trout was suddenly rushing upwards towards my throat.
Stop the car,
I tried to say, putting my hand over my mouth as it filled with sick.
Didn't quite catch that, Jones.
But it was too late.
Christ alive, Jones, what's going on? This is a nightmare. This is hell. Are you the exorcist?
A melting down Daniel cried, as sick spurted out from behind my hand all over his pale grey interior. 11 p.m. My flat. Little sweetheart, I'm so sorry about all this. I'll make it up to you, I promise. You just stay safe in there and leave it all to me. I'm going to show you the best time. I think I'd better call your granddad. Saturday, 14th of October. Dad's Club, London. It was so lovely to see Dad. I told him everything. And he just looked at me with those kind, wise eyes and gave me a big hug. We were sitting in the library. There were old books, maps, globes, a sooty coal fire and leather armchairs whose tattiness went so far beyond the distressed as to be practically psychotic. I feel like a crack whore or one of those women on Jerry Springer who slept with her own grandson, I said. Do you want to feel my bump?
We're all just an impulse away from the Jerry Springer show, love, said Dad, patting his embryonic granddaughter affectionately. I'm not even sure myself if you belong to me or that young curate who did a stint at the vicarage 40 years ago.
I gasped.
I'm joking, pet. But you haven't done anything that 90% of people in the world wouldn't have done in your position. We both looked round at the aged gentleman club members, most of whom were dozing quietly in their armchairs.
85%, said Dad. Look, pet, you never go too far wrong by just telling the truth.
You mean tell Mum? I said, horrified.
Well, no, maybe not your mum just yet. But with Mark and Daniel, just tell the truth and see where it takes you.
Sunday, 15th of October. 2 p.m, my flat. Sitting on the floor, hands trembling, I dialed Daniel's number.
feeling the six collective eyes of Tom, Miranda and Shazza boring into me.
"Yes, Jones," said Daniel into the phone. "Is my ear about to be sprayed with..."
"Daniel, I'm 16 weeks pregnant," I blurted. The line went dead. He hung up on me.
"Fuckwit, total fucking fuckwit from hell with a tail."
"How can any human fuckwit do that?" I said, fuming. "That's it. I'm through with bloody men. They're irresponsible, self-indulgent. Does anyone want to feel my bump?"
"You have to find some way of externalizing these angry thoughts and feelings," said Tom, in his creepy therapist's voice, and patting the bump nervously, as if the baby was going to jump out and be sick on him. "Perhaps by writing them down and burning them?"
"Okay," I said, marching over to the kitchen table and grabbing a post-it pad and a box of matches.
"No," yelled Shazza, "no fires, use the phone."
"Okie dokie." I typed into the phone, "Daniel, you are a selfish, shallow..."
Give it to me, slurred Shazza, grabbing the phone.
She typed, "fuck-witted crap writer," and then pressed send.
"We were supposed to burn it," I said in horror.
"What, the phone?"
"She was supposed to express the angry thoughts and feelings and send them into the universe," said Tom. "Not text them to the object of the angry thoughts. Here, have we run out of wine?"
"Oh, God, and he might be the father of my unborn child."
"Is fine," said Tom, in a drunk yet soothing voice. "Do him good to hear it."
"Tom, shut up. Bridget, you've done your practicing. Now, text Mark," said Miranda. So I did. I simply texted, "I would like to see you." And, to my utter astonishment, he wanted to meet me immediately. Sunday, 15th of October. I stood on the doorstep of Mark's tall, white stuccoed house in Holland Park, as I had stood before so many earth-shattering events, sad, happy, sexual, emotional, triumphant, disastrous, dramatic. The light was on upstairs in his office. He was working as usual. What would he say? Would he reject me as a drunken slag? Might he be pleased? But then...
"Bridget," said the intercom, "are you actually still there, or have you rung the doorbell and run away?"
"I'm here," I said. The door opened a few seconds later. Mark was in sexy work mode, suit trousers, shirt a little undone, sleeves rolled up, and the familiar watch on his wrist.
"Come in," he said.
I followed him into the kitchen. It was exactly the same, spotless, streamlined cabinets, where you couldn't tell which was the dishwasher, which was the cereal cupboard, and which was the pig bin.
"So," said Mark stiffly, "how's life treating you? Work good?"
"Yes. How's yours? Work, I mean."
Good. Well, shit, actually." He gave that conspiratorial half-smile I so loved. "Trying and failing to extract Hanza Farzad from the clutches of the King of Qatar."
"Ah." I gazed out at the garden and trees, the leaves beginning to turn, mind racing. I mean my mind, not the trees' minds. Trees do not have minds, unless you're the mind of Prince Charles or perhaps in Daniel Cleaver's novel. Our whole future rested on these next few babies, I mean moments. I started to re-rehearse what I was going to say. It had to be subtle, slowly built up to.
"All caught up with international trade, of course," Mark was going on. "Always the problem with the Middle East. Endless layers of subterfuge, deceit, conflicted interest."
"Excuse me."
"Yes."
There was a pause. "The garden looks lovely," I eventually said.
"Thank you. Of course it's a devil to keep up with the leaves."
"Yes, it must be."
"Yes."
"Yep. Mark."
"Yes, Bridget."
"Oh, God. Oh, God, I just couldn't do it. I wanted to savour these last few moments when everything seemed like it used to be. Is that a conker tree?"
"Yes, it's a conker tree. And that one's a magnolia, and...
Oh, and what is that one?
Bridget,
I'm pregnant.
Mark's face was a mess of emotions.
How much? How long? Pregnant?
16 weeks.
The christening.
Do you want to feel my bump?
Yes.
He put his hand on it briefly, then said,
Excuse me.
He left the room. I could hear him going upstairs. What was he going to do? Come down with lawsuit papers? The door burst open.
This is the single most wonderful piece of information I have ever been given in my entire life.
He came over and took me in his arms, and the familiar scent of him, the reassuring feel of him, washed over me.
It's... I feel almost as if clouds are dispersing.
He held me away from him, looking at me with tenderness in his brown eyes.
When one's own childhood has been... When one has somehow... I never found it possible to believe that love could translate into a home life, that one could create a home we could bring a child into, that was somehow different. He looked like a small boy, different from one's own.
I hugged him this time and stroked his hair.
And now, he said, coming out of the embrace, with that rare smile he has, in a moment of unadulterated passion, the decision has been made for us, and I'm the happiest man alive.
There was a knock on the door, and Fatima, Mark's longtime housekeeper, appeared.
Oh, she beamed. Miss Jones, you back? And Mr. Darcy, your car's here.
Oh, my goodness, I completely forgot. I have a Law Society dinner.
No, Mark, it's fine. You already said you had a dinner.
But my car can... We can drop you off.
I've got my new car. That's fine.
Tomorrow. We'll meet tomorrow night?
Yes. 7 p.m. My flat. This is unbearable. I'm pregnant, and Mark wants the baby. And if I hadn't slept with Daniel as well, this would have been a complete fairy tale, and we would all be so happy. But, oh, God. Mark and I did occasionally take chances, so maybe sleeping with Daniel is why I'm pregnant. Bloody dolphin condoms. But then I wouldn't have been having the baby if I hadn't tried to save the dolphins from swallowing undissolved condoms. So actually, I should be grateful to the condoms, if only the already dolphin-friendly baby could tell me whose dolphin-friendly baby she is. It's all my fault. But Daniel is so funny and charming. It's like they're two halves of the perfect man, who'll spend the rest of their lives each wanting to outdo the other one. And now it's all enacting itself in my stomach. 7:15 p.m. Toilet really is wonderful invention. It's just amazing to have such an item in one's home, which can so calmly, cleanly and efficiently take all the sick away. Love the lovely toilet. Is cool and solid, calm and dependable. It's fine just to lie here and keep it handy. Maybe it is not Mark I really love, but the toilet. Oh, goody, telephone. Maybe Mark asking how I am. Maybe I will just tell him the whole story and he'll forgive me. 8 p.m. Was Tom. Bridget, am I a horrible person?
Tom, no, you're a lovely person.
Source of horrible person neurosis was that Tom had seen an acquaintance, i.e. guy he shagged once, Jesus, at the front of the gym snack bar queue, gone up to say hi, and then asked Jesus to order him a wheatgrass smoothie. The thing is, Tom obsessed, the thought of queue jumping had, I think, crossed my mind before I decided to say hello to Jesus, so I'm one of those people who coldly, cynically, tries to make things better for themselves at the expense of others, like avoiding buying a round in the pub by going to the toilet. But the key issue you're missing, Tom, I said, happy to escape from my own fucked-up situation for a moment, while simultaneously
feeling a nagging certainty that sooner or later Tom was going to remember about my fucked up situation, then decide he was a horrible person anyway for forgetting to ask about it, is that actually saying hello to a friend is a nice thing to do, and joining Hastus for a gym time beverage is much more friendly than just abandoning him and going to the back of the queue. But then I did abandon Hastus and went and drank the wheatgrass smoothie with Eduardo because he's hotter. You see, I am a horrible person, aren't I? Mind was busily trying to turn the minuscule social gay gaffe into a random act of kindness. But then Tom crashed in with, OK, I get it. I am a horrible person. Goodbye. The phone rang again. Oh, hello, darling. I was just ringing to see what you wanted for Christmas. My mother. Flirted briefly with throwing the cat amongst the pigeons by asking for a bugaboo stroller, but knew she had really called to talk about something else. Bridget, will you come to the Queen's visit rehearsal on the 28th? Mavis is making a huge thing about family values, and, as well as making constant little digs about me not having grandchildren, she's trying to make out that I haven't done as much for the village as her over the years. But I have, darling, haven't I? Of course you have, Mum. Think of all the food. The gherkins, I encouraged, starting to gag. The Scotch eggs, the raspberry pavlovas. Yes, the salmon a la king, all those salmons. Gah! You've been a bastion of village life, Mum, I said. You go sock it to that Mavis. Sock it to? Where did that come from? Thank you, darling. Oh, must whiz. I've left gammon and pineapple in. Was just recovering from the latest vomit, embracing the beloved toilet, when the phone rang again. Was Tom. I forgot to ask you how it went with Mark, you see? Horrible person. Don't deserve to talk to you. Goodbye. Looked confusedly at the phone for a minute, then, thinking about the baby, decided to microwave a cheesy potato. 9 p.m. There you go, little sweetheart. Cheesy potato. We have to tell the truth, don't we? That's one of the things we're always going to do, even if it means being very, very brave. Even if we really don't want to. Monday, 16th of October. Mark's whole house was turned into a baby welcoming committee, with flowers, baby supplies, and a banner across the kitchen saying, "Congratulations, Bridget." Fatima was bustling about, beaming. She hugged me, and then left the room with her usual discretion. "You mustn't carry anything," said Mark, taking my handbag. "Sit here and put your feet up." He sat me on a bar stool at the kitchen counter and tried to lift my feet up onto another bar stool. We both laughed. "Look what I've brought down from the attic for him. I used to love this. Look." An old Scalextric car set was laid out in the, I suppose you could now call it, family room, where the comfy sofas and chairs were. I was laughing and fighting back tears. She might not be ready for that straight away, but Mark bounded over to the fridge. "Look what I've got in here." There were two packs of Huggies nappies. "I thought that was where you were supposed to keep them, so they're nice and cool on the little bottom. No? I'm practicing. You'll move in here, of course. The three of us. It's as if we've been given a second chance at life." My dad's words were repeating themselves in my ear. "You never go too far wrong by just telling the truth." "Mark." He stopped in his tracks at my tone. "What? Bridget, what's wrong? The baby? Is there something wrong?"
"No. No, the baby's fine."
"Oh, thank God."
"It's just, there is one tiny complication."
"Right, right. We can deal with anything. What is it?"
"It's just, I was so upset after the christening when you said you didn't want to get back together and use up any more of my fertile years."
"I'm so very sorry. Believe me, I've been wretched about it, and torn as to whether I should contact you. I allowed myself to be swayed by Jeremy. He caught me in the hallway of the hotel when I went out for breakfast and said it was very wrong of me to be messing around with you at this point in your life
unless I was absolutely certain that I could be constant and be a husband to you. At that point, so raw from the divorce, I didn't feel that morally, responsibly, I should. I closed my eyes. Why couldn't I learn not to be so insecure? Not to flee at the first hint of rejection? To understand that there might be more to it than me being too old or too fat or silly? I felt inadequate, he said, unequal to the task. But now, it's just I was so hurt. I am so very sorry, Bridget. I just felt so old, you see, that I... But no, I felt so old. What did you do?
Is that an elm tree?
Bridget.
I slept with Daniel Cleaver.
The same day?
No, a few days later. I felt as if my sexual days were over, and he was saying I looked so young he didn't know whether to marry me or adopt me, and the friends were saying, get back on that horse, and...
You used protection with both parties?
Mark was opening and closing the stainless steel cabinets. Yes, but they were eco-condoms. It turned out they were past their sell-by date and they dissolved because of the dolphins. He opened another immaculate stainless steel door and a huge pile of mess fell out. Papers, photographs, old shirts, pencils, leaflets. He tried to stuff it all back in. He shut the door on it firmly. I saw his shoulders stiffen, and he turned back to me.
Yes, no, I can quite see how all that would happen. There's no necessity to explain.
He opened another cupboard, found a bottle of scotch, and started pouring himself a glass.
Can you find out, I mean, technically, the paternity who the father is?
He said, gulping down the scotch. Not without risking the baby.
But surely...
I know. But I'm not going to risk it. Giant needle thing. Horrible. He started pacing in his agitated way.
Right, of course. I see now. That would explain why, when we did take the occasional chance...
Then he turned to me, composed, steely.
I expect you'll be wanting to get an early night.
Mark, don't. She could be our baby. There's a 50% chance at least.
It's kind of you to say.
It just takes a moment, an impulse, one bad decision.
Yes, I know. I see it every day of my professional life. Tragic. Life turns on a sixpence. But I don't want that in my personal life, I'm afraid.
I'm so, so sorry.
It's life. One must play with the cards one is dealt. Jolly good. There was nothing to be done with him in this state. He walked me in silence back to the car, and I cried all the way home.